Yes. And Undina, the holy place. But you couldn't make a noise in Undina, you see, just very quiet place. Now, they had a cinema there, and occasionally it would be an English one. Most of the Maltese saw the Italian films, because they could speak a bit of it, you see. But occasionally we'd get one, and it was, so we'd go up there, you know. And
were there particular bands in there?
Oh, yes. It's funny how you went in one bar, and for some reason or other, whenever you went in that one again. You know, it's just one of these things. And there's one we used to go in, and we used to call it Mama's, because this elderly lady was always rushing around and bossing you around, but in a nice way. And if you were good, you'd get something to eat free. But we used to more or less go to Mama's. I don't even know. I know her name was Maria or something, but, you know, everybody says to me, look, this is Mama's bum, you know, so we called her Mama, you know. There was one very, very infamous street in Valletta, and that's where the prostitutes were, you know. And they were nearly all English or Irish. I only ever remember one infamous Maltese woman that was a prostitute. But no, they were, and they used to come, you know, if you went down Straight Street, that's Straight, you know, that's where they were. No. Because there was one that we used to talk to. That's all we used to do. She was about 40. And she came from Liverpool. And we asked her how she got there. And she says, that's my secret. But most of the time she'd talk to you. You know, I mean, she wasn't looking for business from you. You know. Yeah, she'd still got a Liverpoolian accent. Oh, it's a lot of the services here. There's always lots of sailors there, you see, in Malta, you know. And that's one strange thing. I had a pal who became a head teacher, and Len. And we were in Malta, and I'd only been in Malta a matter of weeks, and Len had been moved from Africa, somewhere in Africa. And so we were in, you know, having a look around. We went down this street, Straight Street. And suddenly, we got our uniform on, and suddenly a woman came out from nowhere and took his hat. And he followed her. I didn't see him again until the next day. Yes. And he never spoke about it because he was quite a shy chap. Anyway, he had to get his hat back. But that was the only place. After that, you kept away from it, you know, because it was seedy. So that's why I had no hesitation of remembering Straight Street.
What about the legacies of the war? Have you been
in the Great Sea? Yes, they did. I heard an awful lot about it when Patrick, who I mentioned, mother used to talk about it, where they'd been up in the caves, and he actually took me where they'd lived in the caves for weeks, you know, with Malta was in terrible, and just about everybody lost their home, or it was, you know, had to be built, and that's why they lived in caves, had a dreadful time. And I mean, they were not only the Germans attacking them, but the Italians were as well, you see. Came over from Italy, the Italian planes, and they ate everything, you know. They ate dogs, they ate rats. There's just nothing, you see, nothing. They really had a dreadful time. But they were so fond of the British. Yeah. If you go to Malta, you can get, as soon as they know you're from Britain or England, there's a different atmosphere. I mean, they're nice all the time, but they have this thing about, and they, t- whether it's because we were there and tried to help, etc. But there's a warmness that comes out as soon as they've found out that you're English, British, whatever. And that's why I love the Maltese. Yeah. And they're so honest, too.
Yeah. And was there Don Mintoff? Was he
Yes. Our friends didn't like him at all. No, they didn't like him.
Yeah. So what did you hear about him when you were out there?
Well, a bit personal, but they claim that he was not sincere. He lied a lot. He'd been involved in some, funny cases, sort of thing. And they had no respect for him at all. Now, of course, other people did. And there were actually, there were riots, not when I was there, but at the time of his, there were riots in the streets by rival gangs. And I'd say my Maltese friends, they never have had a good word to say for him.
Right. Was there any unrest of any sort while you were there?
When it was a polling day, there was, but it wasn't. It was mainly shouting. I'm shouting this, and he's shouting this. And of course they are a bit excitable. You know, like Italians and like Arabs can be, because I mean the blood is mainly Arab, and so they do get emotional a bit more than we do, but they're sincere with it.
How long were you in Malta altogether?
I was in there, apart from when we were out and about. I was in there till almost 2 years, because I mean I'd only been in a few weeks when I was sent over there, and. The day I left, awful, really. And Alan, who a friend of mine, he had the next bed to me, and we became good pals, and we used to see each other when we came back home. And he was a very clever person, actually. And when I was going home, he wasn't there. When I was packing to go, he wasn't there. And then I looked, and there was something on his bed, and he'd written a little note to me. It said, "Stan, parting is such sweet sorrow," and blah, 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 blah. And I'd always, believed that Shakespeare hadn't written all his. I still have that mode now, and he said something about, and as your pal, William Shakespeare, the draft artist, and I've still got that piece of paper somewhere.
Yeah.
When we moved here, I found it, and of course he's been dead. He was found dead in his early 40s, I've still got a piece of paper, but it's just torn it out of a writing book. Another nice memory. That was after, that's when he was back. In Britain, but we kept in touch. I've so many people that I've kept in touch with.
So you said that you considered staying on.
Yeah, I did. I got the papers.
So I mean, it was really for your mother that you came back.
Well, yes, because my mother wasn't a letter writer, but when Dad would write 5-6 pages, and Mum would just put one sentence on, I miss my big boy, and blah 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 blah. And I know she used to always be worried, because a lot of the things I've done and where we've been and whatnot, I didn't even tell her. Only when we were away for several weeks, like we were in Iraq, I didn't even mention we were out there, because she'd be worried to death. Bless her.
So, do you have any idea of what you would do when?
Well, I came back and I went straight back to my job at the brewery. Only I got, obviously, I was more important then.
Yeah.
No, I didn't need to type then. But no, I went back to the brewery, and nearly all the people who had been in the office had been there, were there, and most of them had kept in touch. I was very lucky. And it was just. I felt rather superior, I've been here and I've done this,
How were you changed? I mean,
oh yes, I, yes.
Well, 18 just fancy.
Yeah. When I came home, my mother said I'd grown up, you know, because I was thinking for myself, making my own decisions. Well, I had to, you see, while I was away. You had to make your decisions, etc. And I think it did me a world of good. It made me think about things and about people and the differences. And as I say, I remember when I first went home, I lit a cigarette up. My mother was horrified. I said, "Mum, I'm 20, grown up." About 30 years later, I stopped smoking. Yeah. But, you know, she still thought, oh, you know. They were loving parents, but strict. There was no answering back. And my mother had a thing about lies. If she found out you'd lied, she really was a little lady, but she was very angry. Yeah. And once at Christmas, my young brother knocked a Christmas tree down. I was about 16, 17 at the time, not long before I went in. And he'd been messing with the tree, and she said to me, "Watch it, he doesn't knock that tree down." Anyway, what happened? My other brother knocked it down, you see. He was a youngster. So when she came home, I said, "Has he been at that tree again?" So I said, no, I said, no, it was our Paul that did it, that's a baby. And I was looking after my little cousin, then he says, "Auntie Eva is lying, your Brian did it." Well, she got this Christmas tree and she chased me down the garden, up the road, and she was trying to wallop me with it. And the articles were falling off and people were having hysterics. After that, of course, you know, we used to sit and I'd say, "Oh, it's Christmas, Mum." She said, "Oh, didn't I make a fool of myself?" But it's only because I'd lied. I was brought up in that environment than one doesn't lie.
So how difficult was it going back to live at home again?
Well, you see, I'd been used to making all my decisions, so I started going out and doing what I wanted, you know. And eventually my mother cottoned on, "Well, he's a big lad now, look what he's been, he's had a bayonet, a gun in his, and he's had to do this and not that." And I was totally different. I mean, you know, when I went in, I'd never polished a pair of shoes or anything, you see. I was spoiled.
So, can you sum it up in a few words, what National Service actually taught you?
It taught me to respect people. It also taught me about being disciplined, personally disciplined. And it made me, I was so happy that I'd had the experience. Because, you know, I'd say I had such a quiet life, as it were. And it was the decision things that did it. Because before I went away, I used to ask, "Shall I do this? Can I do that?" And when I came home, you know, it was different. And my father respected me as well. Because we always had a very good relationship. But and he used to say, "Oh, tell me about that, son." You know, and I'd get my photograph album, which still got up there now, you know, photographs taken in Egypt and in Malta and all, you know, Iraq and the other places we've been to. And he'd never been in the forces,
yes,
you know, and it was interest, you know. And we used to have lovely sessions about him. In a way, I think he just thought, "Oh, he's damn lucky, I wish I could have done it when I was this age."
You mentioned Egypt and Iraq. Were there any other places where you went with the RAF?
Oh, yes. We went to Cyprus about 3 times, just on practice things. And then, where was it when... I'm trying to think. We on one of these things, we were told to anybody to take the glasses off, and this is in the plane, and you didn't have seatbelts in those days, you know, and there's about 30 or 40 of us there. And then they said, "And now get your hands on like this, we may be crashing." And we landed in what's that little island called? Sardinia. And they had to put us up in two hotels, because we had to wait for another plane to come over to pick us up. So it could have been, could be. And I'd only got a few weeks to go. And it could just have been the big one.
Yeah.
But fortunately,
you know,
it wasn't.
The plane?
They don't tell you, dear. But no, it was a bit frightening. But we only spent a day and a half there, but it was a lovely little place we were. I'd never been to Sardinia. I've often thought, oh, I'd like to go back.
Yeah.
I've got a photograph there again of someone took of me and Alan. But it could have been a fatal thing, you know.
Yeah.
But it's fortunate.
When you were in the squadron office, what was your work mainly concerned?
Well, it was keeping records of everybody there. Personal details, you know, which had to be very secure. And also, if anybody had done anything wrong, recording all these things. And being there when... Well, just every record. Because whatever was done to one of the planes, I had to have a copy of it and have it filed away, you know. And so it was... It might sound rather monotonous, but there was always interesting things happening. Well, date of birth, what they'd ever, if they'd ever done anything wrong, blah, blah. Very, it was personal. And, of course, that's why I'm a bit secretive, you know.
Yeah.
Because...
would they have things about people's situation at home? Or
and sometimes,
like
sometimes, yeah. But, I mean, that's why, in that part, in my later career, I was secretary of a committee that dealt with things on people's behalf which had to be kept very, very quiet. And actually being there taught me, because the group captain made it clear that I didn't tell anybody, not ever. And so when I did that job voluntary for 19 years, and I used to think, that's my training, because if I'd have said anything, I'd have been dismissed if anybody on the committee told anybody, because we dealt with very, very, very traumatic things sometimes, like a person whose son had murdered his girlfriend, and his mother wanted to go to the trial was going to be kept, and she hadn't got the money. Well, we paid for her to travel and take the thing, and I mean nobody knew that, you know, very thing. So having all that information,
the officers could trust you.
Well, I mean, I was kind of knew that, and I mean, and it was instilled into me by Sergeant Fox, who'd always done that sort of work, you know. But, and because there were such genuine people, I went along with it, and I never told anybody.
Mm.
There were one or two things I could have told people, but you don't, you don't. And they say that's why I did this... voluntary job for all those years, which was very, very, in some cases, very tragic, and that you never.
No. Are there any things that maybe were confidential, strictly at the time, about the RAF that would illuminate what those days were like that you perhaps tell us now?
Well, one, you kind of worked. It was like working in a kind of a rota. You knew what to be done and how it got to be done.
Mm.
And that was it. And you always had to be aware of what was happening. And also, the only thing, that I was told nearly everything, but when we're having those tests, I wasn't told that, and yet I was involved with it. You know, when we're having the fly, you know, when we went over on an exercise to time ourselves, all the information would be in that office. Because that's where the group captain made the decisions. But I knew everything else.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's why I went to see Samson and Delilah. I didn't know we were going to go. So, I mean, I was trusted with so much, but not that. Because it had to be... I mean, the one to Iraq was genuine, you know. And we were there in very, very quick. We did marvellously. But it was only because everybody knew what they had to do. You know, everybody's job. They knew certain things they had to do. And in mine, as I say, with all the documentation and things, that used to be my responsibility.
Well, I mean, was national security and sort of military security, was that sort of a big issue? Was that something that was talked about? I mean,
not very much.
No.
Not very much. No. No.
It was considered a friendly country, model, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Very friendly. Yeah. Very friendly.
No Russian spies or fear of Russian spies?
Well, there was a few years ago. It's funny you pick on Russians, because a few years ago, there was some Russians went to Malta and tried to cause trouble. And they were criminals, eventually. Yeah. It's funny you should just say, because, I mean, when I heard, because we were in regular contact with our friends, and it was Patrick was still alive then, and he told, you know, the Maltese chap, and he, they'd come over and they were kind of making a, you know, criminal thing. And they were imprisoned and deported. But
any other stories
in
your service career that
you've
heard a lot?
Oh, yes. There's so much, actually. And as I say, the last few months I've thought very, very much about the Iraqi thing.
Yes.
Knowing that how poor the people are anyway, were, and still are, and what they've gone through. And also that horrible tyrant they had. But I kept thinking I was there, because when they mentioned Basra an awful lot. And of course, that was near Shaiba, where I was. And I was thinking about, I wonder if those people are still living in
same
those
people, yeah.
conditions, and if they are starving and whatnot. And the one thing, though, that doesn't seem to have changed, or not even now, is the sadness of the women.
Mm.
They're still wearing the barbers,
yeah.
you know, and it seems so. I thought perhaps would start a bit of, you know, because in Iraq you do find that there are some women that are solicitors and things, but I mean in Iran,
yes.
but in Iraq they're still backward looking, yeah. and it yeah. must be awful being a girl or
yeah.
a woman,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
being.
Certainly your national service illuminated you and gave you lots of information.
Oh, it did actually. It really. It really, you know, really changed so much.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much indeed. It's been very interesting. Thank you very much. And I'll just say, Stanley Colt, End of Reel 3.